It's a perplexing story that John tells of this encounter in the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus, but it's an important one. Barbara Brown Taylor resets the scene for us, remembering that Jesus had worked a miracle at their house just days before. You remember he had been across the river when the sisters' urgent message had reached him. "Lord," it read, "he whom you love is ill." So he had come to them, knowing full well it was too late. Jesus was so dead that Lazarus was so dead that there was a stench, so dead that Jesus stood in front of his tomb and wept. Then he roared so loud at death that he scared death away. While the sisters tried to decide whether to run away too, their brother Lazarus came stumbling from the tomb, trailing his shroud behind him like a used cocoon. Now Jesus had come back to Bethany with the temple posse hot on his trail. By raising Lazarus from the dead, Jesus had graduated from the category of manageable nuisance to serious threat. News of the incident has sent his followers over the top. There's not a chance Pilate is going to ignore them during the Passover festival. It's time for Jesus to disappear before he leads hundreds to their deaths. His days are numbered. And so the sisters take him in and care for him, shutting the world out for this one night at least. Lazarus is still clumsy from his 4 days in the tomb. He sits and stares while Martha makes a stew. Mary, meanwhile, has slipped away, gone to find something in her room. Martha is used to this. Mary's always disappearing, even when she's sitting right there with everyone else. She gets this look on her face, like she's listening to music that no one else can hear. Martha knows there's nothing to be done but to work around her. Finally, supper is on the table, and they all sit down to eat, saying what they hope and hiding what they fear. Lazarus sits near his friend Jesus, unaware of the trade that has occurred. Jesus was safe across the river, beyond the reach of his enemies. But now, by returning to Bethany, he has traded his life for the life of his friend. It's ironic, to say the least. The recently deceased Lazarus of Bethany will outlive his Savior. What Mary knows and what the others seem to miss is precisely what time it is. We think of time as a certain chronology of hours and minutes and seconds, and that is time in one sense, what the Greeks called chronos. But the Greeks had another word for time, too. Time in a deeper and more profound sense. The word they used for that kind of time was kairos, which meant an opportune moment, a time when conditions were right for the accomplishment of a crucial action. People of faith understood kairos as a time when God was about to act. With Jesus at table in her home, Mary noticed what time it was and seemed to understand that she was in the middle of a kairos moment. So she slipped away briefly and came back with a clay jar full of perfume. Not just any perfume, but nard, a pungent oil used to anoint the dead. Jesus knew what it was and told the guests that Mary had bought the ointment for his burial. As she cracked open the jar and began to pour it out on Jesus' feet, it all seemed premature by at least a few days. But Mary knew. Mary knew. Mary Ann McKibben Dana says that Mary anoints Jesus' feet not just for his burial, but for that short, resolute walk toward death when he will enter Jerusalem and his passion that awaits him the very next day. "What do we do when time grows short?" she asked. Mary offers us an answer. And her response embodies the advice given by Annie Dillard, the well-known to writers everywhere. Her advice was, spend it all, shoot it, play it, lose it all right away, every time. Do not hoard what is good for a later place and time. Give it all, give it now. It's advice for life, she said, as well as for writing. It seems to be the reason why after Judas objects and says the nard could have been sold and the money could have been spent on the poor, for Jesus' rather blunt response about the poor always being with us. The point is not to be resigned and complacent about that fact, but it is to be present to what each moment requires. And what this moment requires of Mary is an act of reckless beauty. I'm struck particularly today by that phrase, present to what each moment requires. Indeed, that is the Christian calling in all times and all seasons, is it not? To learn how to weep with those who weep, to be ready to rejoice with those who rejoice, to be prepared to celebrate every new beginning and to grieve each loss, to know when to be alert and vigilant and active, and when to practice Sabbath, to become adept at telling time, in short, adept at knowing the chronos and the kairos of every day, present to what each moment requires. Some people I know look around at the signs of our times these days and they want to throw up their hands. What's happening to our world, they ask? What's happening to our nation? There's so much anger, so much fear, so little thought, so little civil conversation or consideration of the common good. The signs are discouraging almost everywhere, to be sure. The poet W.H. Auden once noted that we must love one another or die. Civilizations, as we have known them, seem to be dying for lack of such love and understanding. Bob McKillop worried about what was lacking and decided to do something. McKillop is the men's basketball coach at my alma mater, Davidson College, down in North Carolina. Last summer, long before anyone's focus was on the Final Four, long before the season even began, McKillop took his team on a trip to Europe. But it wasn't a basketball trip. The team traveled to Poland to visit Auschwitz and to meet with a Holocaust survivor. In an op-ed piece in the Washington Post, written in the midst of that trip, the coach explained his intentions. The volatility of our world right now requires a response informed by both a respect for human dignity and an understanding of what happens in its absence, McKillop wrote. Life, sports, academics, experience have challenged these young men in myriad ways, but they've never been tested like this. Last Saturday, he said, we flew partway around the globe to Poland. We're stepping into a moment in time when, for millions, evil seemed to have triumphed and humanity had all but vanished. We'll walk the gas chambers and the railroad tracks of Auschwitz with the survivor of Josef Mengele's inhuman experiments as our guide. We will not touch a basketball the entire trip. I want our players to understand this experience for life, McKillop said, and to bring it back, not just as a lesson, but then to live what they learn. Our world needs leaders who aim to lead and to serve, as our college mission statement declares, guided by humane instincts and creative and disciplined minds. We need advocates for and defenders of human dignity. Coach McKillop knew a kairos moment when he saw it, and he wanted his players to see it too. There's a sense in which the signs of our times have been linear and chronologically ordered. We can look back and identify the causes that led, say, to a great recession and the resulting loss of jobs, the loss of pensions, the stagnation of wages, at the same time that a relatively small number of people flourished, and more than flourished. We can understand the chronos of the anger and the frustration that bubbled up to the surface in those days. We can understand the danger also in such anger and frustration when not addressed thoughtfully and responsibly. I think of that Tom Toro cartoon leaning on Santayana's wisdom. Two men seated in a library, the older one saying to the younger, "Those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it." Yes, those of us who do study history are doomed to stand by helplessly while everyone else repeats it. It is worrisome, to say the least. But as Coach McKillop and many others have known, it's not hopeless. What if we looked at this day, at this season in our life together, as a Kairos moment, as a moment of opportunity? What if, like Mary, we were to choose to do something bold for the sake of something sacred? What if we were to recognize the importance of acting this day to counter all that incivility and fear and anger with acts of extravagant grace? This is not a moment that needs the strong counter voice of a church that doesn't accept hatred or bigotry, that doesn't practice fear or speak in anger or denigrate others, but practices the love and the grace, the forbearance and the hospitality that we have learned from Jesus. Remember Mary and her bold witness in the house of her brother Lazarus. Lazarus is not unimportant here. Perhaps Lazarus' presence is what prompts Mary to anoint Jesus without delay. Mary Ann McKibben Dana again said, "Mary has known the sting of death. Her brother sits there as a living reminder. By taking action when she does, by not delaying, she transforms the pungent smell of nard from one of death to one of life. She doesn't wait until it's too late, until the proper time. She pours it out precisely at the time when people won't understand, when it will be seen as an eccentric extravagance. For it's a protest against the order of things. In its own way, it is a protest against death itself. It is perhaps also a protest of another sort, fitting for even our own day, because Mary's extravagance points to the divine extravagance and grace, which contrasts so poignantly with the miserly anger and the dismal selfishness of our time. Barbara Brown Taylor notes that Mary rubbed Christ's feet with the perfume so precious that its sale might have fed a poor family for a year, an act so lavish that it suggests another layer to her act of love. There will be nothing economical about this man's death, just as there has been nothing economical about his life. In him, the extravagance of God's love is made flesh. In him, the excessiveness of God's mercy is made manifest. At home in Bethany, the storm clouds are still piling up against the door when Mary gives the forecast. It's going to be bad, very bad. But there's no reason for Jesus' friends to lock their hearts and head to the cellar. Whatever they need, there will be enough to go around. Whatever they spend, there will be plenty left over. There's no reason to fear running out of nard or of life, either one. For where God is concerned, there is always more than we can ever ask or imagine. Gifts from our lavish, lavish Lord. So why? Why would we clamor to close ourselves in and to shut others out and be filled with fear and hate and shout insults at those with whom we disagree? Why? Emerson once said, "The years teach us much that the days never knew." Living in the moment, we may forget how to tell time, may forget how to differentiate one moment from another. But the years teach us to be present to what each moment requires. And if we are wise, and if we are faithful, we will remember. May God grant us such memory and wisdom like Mary's while there is yet time.